KSDP, 8:30 a.m. in Sandpoint, K201DA, 88.1 FM in King Cove, KOLD, 91.9 FM in Cold Bay, KFPS, 88.1 FM in Falls Pass, and KKQA, 88.1 FM in Accutan, Alaska.
You're tuned in to KAEB, 91.9 on your FM dials, playing you the hits from yesteryear, this year, and the next.
From KMXT in Kodiak, it's the Alaska Fisheries Report. I'm Terry Haynes.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from Madsen, delivering the essentials for everyday life in the last frontier. Learn more at madsen.com/Alaska.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by the Alaska Marine Safety Education Association, providing U.S. Coast Guard accepted hands-on safety training for all of Alaska's fishermen and their families. AMSEA at amsea.org or 907-747-3287.
The allocation of Chinook or King salmon under the Pacific Salmon Treaty is much lower this year in southeast Alaska, almost 40% lower than last year, and it's affecting all user groups. As reported by KFSK's Olivia Rose, the treaty is an agreement between the U.S. and Canada, ensuring both countries get some fish. The sport allocation for southeast Alaska, or the amount of fish the group is allowed to take, is 27,700 wild king salmon, a slice out of the region's 130,000 fish pie. Patrick Fowler is the regional fisheries management coordinator for the State Department of Fish and Game. He says under the significantly lower allocation, everyone's going to fish less.
The Board of Fish has given us the allocation plan for like how big of a slice of the pie for each fishery. But because the base of the whole pie wasn't as big, everyone's slice is smaller.
The department expects resident anglers to harvest about 10,000 fish, which leaves about 17,000 fish for non-residents this year. But resident fishermen in Southeast are looking at a limit of a single king salmon per day that's at least 28 inches. As for non-residents, they can take one king salmon per year from the region. The one fish limit follows regulation changes made by the Alaska Board of Fisheries in February, which reduced how much wild salmon gets allocated to the commercial troll fishery and increased the sport allocation. The board also made changes to the king salmon management plan, instructing the State Department to prioritize opportunity for resident anglers while managing the sport fishery to stay strictly within allocation. The changes mean years with a higher allocation would allow for residents to take up to 3 fish a day, and in lower allocation years to go down to 1 a day, but without an annual limit for residents. That's different from the last few years when residents had a 2 fish daily limit and non-residents could have 1 fish per day with an annual limit up to 3. As Fowler says, quote, "So it's significantly less opportunity for non-residents, and then for residents, instead of having a 2 fish daily limit, they have a 1 fish daily limit." Fowler says because of the push to protect sport fishing for residents, the burden of staying within the region's sport allocation limit is put on the non-resident sector. He says if it looks like the sport anglers might catch more fish than what's allowed, the non-resident fishery would be the first to close.
There's nothing lower than a 1 fish annual limit. You know, we can't go to half a fish. So the only tool we have left is to close the fishery, close the retention.
He says that kind of closure is unlikely. But being the first year with the regulation and management changes in place, it's hard having less fish to work with.
You know, having a 1 fish annual limit is it's going to be hard on a lot of those non-resident businesses that operate in the sport sector, sport guided sector, or boat rental sector. This plan is a direct result of the actions that the Board of Fish took this year.
Catching kings is prohibited until July 14th in waters near the Stikine River around Wrangell and Petersburg. Otherwise, in the southeast management area, most sport anglers will need to wait until June 14th to fish king salmon. There are special regulations for a few hatchery areas, like the Wrangell Narrows Blind Slough Fishery, which opens May 15th, under regulations announced last month. Hatchery fish are not part of the treaty allocation of wild king salmon, so fish caught in those areas don't count against this year's restricted bag limits in southeast Alaska.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, working to raise the value of our seafood harvest for the benefit of all Alaskans. On the web at alaskaseafood.org.
Chum salmon stocks have been on the decline in recent years. Climate change-induced water warming and acidification hasn't helped, but neither has bycatch, and soon the federal government might do something about it. KNOM's Ben Townsend has more.
The Seward Peninsula Subsistence Regional Advisory Council meets twice a year. On Tuesday, Council Chair Louis Green Jr. brought up one issue long on his mind, chum salmon bycatch. That's salmon inadvertently caught while fishing for other seafoods like halibut or crab.
I started dealing with this stuff at the Board of Fish in 1993, and we said that if you don't start trying to find a way to stop what's happened near the northern Norton Sound.
He's referring to what he described as the first in a series of red flags of collapsing fish runs.
If you don't start trying to find a way to stop what's happened near the northern Norton Sound, you're going to end up with it in the Uniplate, you're going to end up with it in the Yukon and the Kuskokwim. God help us if it starts happening in the Bristol Bay.
Decades later, the federal government might finally do something about it. Comments in Green's Advisory Council meetings feed over to the North Pacific Fishery Management Council, which is considering bycatch proposals. That council recommends rules for commercial fishing for many fish species across a giant swath of federally managed Alaska area waters. In February, the Management Council unveiled five proposals it's considering. They include a combination of hard bycatch caps, new regulations, a proposed migratory corridor for Western Alaska chum, and maintaining the status quo. That's unlimited chum salmon bycatch.
There's some inter-industry measures to minimize chum bycatch, but they haven't been super effective in our opinion.
That's Therese Vicente. She's a policy and programs director for the Kuskokwim River Intertribal Fish Commission. The organization represents fish commissioners from all 33 federally recognized tribes along the Kuskokwim.
We've really been working to elevate tribal knowledge and tribal voices in this action and in the analysis so that the North Pacific Council and the National Marine Fisheries Service have the most comprehensive and best available information at their fingertips.
Vicente says the migratory corridor option has been popular amongst tribal representatives.
That's consistently where the most Western Alaska chum are found. So those chum coming back to rivers from Kotzebue up in the north all the way down to Bristol Bay in the south.
The North Pacific Fishery Management Council is expected to release a draft environmental impact statement on its bycatch proposals in August. Members of the public will have 60 days to provide comment. Reporting in Nome, I'm Ben Townsend.
Providing satellite communication solutions for commercial fishermen across the state of Alaska. Information and dealers can be found at satellitewest.com or by calling 206-321-6896.
Author Mary Dinon spent years researching the history of canneries in the Bristol Bay region. Her book, The Winter Watchman's Daughter, Memoirs of Life on the Nooshagak, tells the story of roughly 100 years of cannery history in the region through her ancestors, who were responsible for maintaining the canneries through the harsh Alaska seasons. Dinon began working on the book in 2017 and self-published its first edition in 2023. On a recent visit to Dillingham to present her research to the community, she joined KDLG to talk about her personal ties to the region and the stories she uncovered about the area's collective history.
Growing up here in Dillingham, as a lot of us know, the fisheries, salmon summer when the return of millions of salmon come into Bristol Bay canneries is just a very common fare. This is who we are and what we do. And my family has been involved in fishing and specifically cannery work.
Tell me a little bit about your book.
The book is called The Winter Watchman's Daughter, Memoirs of Life on the Nooshigak. And turns out my father, we knew he had a lot of pictures of the old Dillingham, but after he died, we have boxes and boxes of slides, and I just couldn't reconcile with the fact that they were sitting in a box and they had such historic value that should be really shared with this whole community. So I've been working on this book since 2017, basically gathering information and stories and researching history and finding church registries and census records. And it turns out in 1883, the very first cannery that was built in Bristol Bay was built on the east side of the Nooshigak River, and it was called the Arctic Packing Company, and the native village was called Kanulik. And the person who I'm writing this book about is my grandmother, Ella. Ella was born in 1910 in Chagyung here in Dillingham. Her father was a winter watchman at that very first cannery, the Arctic Packing Company. And he was also a winter watchman at the second cannery built in Bristol Bay, which is the Alaska Packers Association, but it's well known to most of us here in Dillingham as the Scandinavian Cannery. So Ella and her family lived at the Scandinavian Cannery. And after Ella's father died, her first husband became the winter watchman. So she went from being the winter watchman's daughter to the winter watchman's wife. So basically, my grandmother Ella lived her entire life on a cannery compound. The quote that I got from my uncle, Harlan Atkinson, is that the winter watchman is an oversimplification of the word. Basically, the winter watchman puts the cannery to bed in the fall and wakes the cannery up in the spring. They lived year-round on the cannery compound, made sure to protect it from the elements, the weather, the ice flows. And then they also woke it up in the spring by making sure the water was running and the machines and the buildings were operating, preparing the cannery for the busy summer season, including hiring the beach gang and the fishermen for the cannery. And so I wanted to tell that story. I wanted to tell the story and bring to life who lived there, what did they do, what did the children do. When the parents are working all hours of the night, delivering fish and working in the mess hall and being the laundry lady, where are the kids? And so I was able to interview some of our now elders, including my Uncle Harlan and also his first cousin, Frederick Nielsen, who lives here in Dillingham, and try to capture some of those childhood memories that they had on the docks of Peter Pan.
And what would you say is your biggest takeaway from this process?
I think my biggest takeaway from writing this book is just the community and realizing how we really are all connected. And, you know, there's a lot of value in us as community and family. And for us to share that history, it just brings people together.
That was Mary Dynon, author of The Winter Watchman's Daughter, Memoirs of a Life on the Nooshigak. The book is available online through Barnes & Noble.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report is provided by the Stosh and Claudia Anderson Fund. In recognition of the fishing industry, which provides more than 50,000 Alaskan jobs from a renewable source.
Now, the rest of the story. In the medieval Dutch town of Leiden in the early 17th century, the immigrants were getting restless. There was a significant immigrant population, even back there, even back then. You see, the people of Blyden had a motto in those days, a slogan not unlike our own. Give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe the free, and so on. Their saying was, quote, Blyden refuses no honest people free entry, period. It was not quite as catchy as the generous entreaty inscribed on the pedestal of Lady Liberty, but it was effective, so effective that within months of its first utterance, 30% of the town of Blyden was foreign-born and foreign-speaking. But eventually, as I say, those immigrants grew restless. And the issue was tolerance, for the immigrants had come to Blyden in the first place, fleeing intolerance elsewhere in the world. In other words, these were the unwanted, the unappreciated, even the persecuted from other shores, seeking a society which would welcome them as they were, instead of insisting on conformity to local custom. But after only a little more than a decade in warm, welcoming, tolerant Leiden, the tolerated immigrants lost their own tolerance for their new home. Our children are becoming too assimilated, too Dutch, the ungrateful immigrants began complaining. Or, we aren't getting enough jobs, they complained. And predictably, when the Dutch natives of Leiden began hearing that sort of thing, they began rethinking their original policy of open doors and open arms. No, the Dutch refused to deport their malcontents, but their individual unofficial attitudes became less hospitable. And you can see where this is going. Many of the immigrants who only a half generation before had flocked to Leiden so gladly and so gratefully packed up and moved out to the New World. So, after the so-called pilgrims wore out their welcome in Leiden, Holland in 1620, a handful of them got into a shaky little boat, sailed across the sea to Plymouth Rock, but there was a stowaway aboard the Mayflower, and that unseen passenger was the culture of Leiden itself. For despite their relentless struggle for originality, the pilgrims brought with them to their new home in North America a collage of customs which Americans recognize and revere to this day. The civil registration of marriages, for example, which initiated the then unique concept of separation of church and state. Almost two centuries later, John Quincy Adams would cite the Mayflower Compact as the foundation for the United States Constitution. But did he know that the United Colonies, which the Pilgrims established in New England in 1643, the consolidation of semi-independent jurisdictions into one nation, that was based on a form of federal government that they had first observed in the Netherlands, the United Provinces. And one thing more, back in Leiden, there was a particular celebration. It was a day commemorating the end of the Spanish siege against the city in 1574. It was sort of like our 4th of July, but the focus of those Dutch festivities, instead of fireworks, was gratitude. Thanksgiving Day, it was called. Yes, I do mean to say that when you're giving thanks today, save some for the people of 17th century Leiden, whose own immigrants emigrated to our distant rocky shore, where eventually, however arduously, freedom was born. Now you know the rest of the story.
This is Statewide News from Alaska Public Media. I'm Ava White. Alyeska Pipeline Service Company will begin preparations next week for inspecting and possibly repairing a small section of the Trans-Alaska Pipeline near downtown Delta Junction. KUAC's Tim Ellis reports.
Alyeska spokesperson Michelle Egan said Wednesday the project is part of a routine inspection process to ensure the integrity of the pipeline. She said in email responses to questions that workers will excavate soil and other material from a 10-foot section of pipe to allow for a more extensive inspection in May. Egan said company officials want to take a closer look at that stretch of the pipeline where an automated device inside the pipe detected what she called an anomaly during an inspection conducted last year. She said that could indicate that the pipe wall is thinning in that spot. That section of the pipeline was buried in the 1970s. She said if a problem is found, Alyeska officials may decide to apply a steel sleeve around the 48-inch diameter pipe to reinforce it and repair damage. She said that repair would be done later in May and would not require shutting down the pipeline. An Alyeska notice posted to social media says the project will involve large volumes of workers in and around the site, located in the pipeline right-of-way off Nistler Road between the Deltana Fairgrounds and Delta Junction Elementary School. Egan said traffic will be controlled along that stretch of Nistler Road while trucks and other equipment enter and exit the roadway. The project's expected to be completed in June. In Delta, I'm Tim Ellis.
Anchorage Mayor Suzanne LaFrance says her administration is chipping away at one of her keystone goals, building 10,000 homes in 10 years. The initiative comes as housing prices have soared in Anchorage, fewer homes are available, and homelessness has become a crisis for the city. At a press conference at City Hall yesterday, LaFrance admitted she has an ambitious goal.
10,000 homes in 10 years is a bold strategy to bring more housing to Anchorage. We won't fix a housing crisis like ours through simply one single action. We need to be committed to a series of actions that make it cheaper and easier to build or renovate.
Assemblymember Anna Brawley has introduced an ordinance that would create a temporary tax reprieve for new multifamily home construction. Brawley says it would reduce the cost of building homes and allow the city to invest in new construction.
Essentially, the idea, again, is to make it more financially feasible by temporarily giving up some of that tax revenue with the idea that eventually that property gets fully on the tax rolls.
Brawley's ordinance is scheduled to have a public hearing next Wednesday, with a vote by the Assembly set for April 22nd. This is Alaska Public Media.
The Alaska Morning News is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Sustaining membership offers public media greater financial stability month to month, so consider making a sustaining gift to this station. Thank you.
If you love what you hear on your public radio station, consider becoming a member.
Support for NPR comes from the Skoll Foundation, dedicated to powering social innovators to transform the world. Learn more at skoll.org. And Jarl and Pamela Moan, focusing on civil liberties, foster youth, public radio, and the arts.
Fiber Plus Internet is now available in Sandpoint and King Cove. GCI offers high-speed internet in your community at the same plans and pricing as in Anchorage. More information is available at gci.com/internet.
You're listening to Statewide News from Alaska Public Media. I'm Ava White. South Central and Kodiak Island residents are preparing for a likely eruption of Mount Spur, a volcano about 80 miles west of Anchorage, but the potential impacts of that will pale in comparison to the largest volcanic eruption in the 20th century. Ash from the 1912 Novorupti Katmai eruption still affects residents on Kodiak Island to this day. KMXT's Davis Hovey has the story.
If Mount Spur erupts, scientists say the amount of ashfall that hits South Central and Kodiak Island communities will depend on several factors. Still, any amount of ash will likely ground flights, darken the sky, and potentially pose health risks to those with respiratory issues. Even if the worst-case scenario occurs, Kodiak residents won't experience anything close to what happened in 1912. More than 100 years ago, a village called Sovanoski sat in what is now Katmai National Park and Preserve at the foot of Mount Katmai. The village was used traditionally as a subsistence fishing site for salmon. But in 1912, the Novorupti Katmai eruption forced residents out of their village and across Naknek Lake. Teddy Melganek's parents were among them.
Sparks, you could see them. Sparks in the air. A lot of ash in the ground. Ground gets so hot. They say you can't even lay down on the ground and can't go to sleep and get warm.
Melganek recounted his experience for University of Alaska Fairbanks oral history program in 1998. He said many elders at the time thought it was the end of the world. In historical accounts the National Park Service collected, witnesses said the ash fallout darkened the sky around Katmai for 3 days. Roughly 100 miles away in Kodiak, ash completely filled the air and plunged the city into darkness, forcing residents to take shelter on the U.S. Revenue cutter Manning. Much of that ash remains in the Valley of 10,000 Smokes to this day, and occasionally gets resuspended in the air by strong northwesterly winds. Hans Schweiger, a research geophysicist with the Alaska Volcano Observatory, says the resuspension is due to an enormous amount of volcanic ash in the area where there is not much vegetation to hold it down in the soil. That's unlike the area around Mount Spur.
That's partly the reason why there's just this almost unlimited source region. But, you know, as things age, there's a lot of the fine material can get sort of blown away. These sort of resuspension events can happen with any sort of primary deposit as well. So like when Spur erupted in 1992, there was remobilization and resuspension of ash in the Anchorage area for a couple weeks afterwards.
But in this case, ash from the 1912 Novorupti Katmai eruption continues to hit the west side of Kodiak Island, roughly 65 miles away. That ash has drifted to Larson Bay and Karluk at least four times in the last month. Although the air quality has not been significantly impacted recently, the resuspended ash affects local aircraft that regularly fly passengers from Kodiak to Larson Bay, Karluk, and other communities around the archipelago. Eric Howard directs operations at Island Air. He says their two flights to Larson Bay were canceled on Monday, April 7th, due to resuspended ash.
The big thing for us is when you do get those strong westerly winds, typically the ash will be worse on the west side of the island. So when we're operating to some of the float stops over there, and then the villages of Larson Bay and Karluk are usually the ones that get affected by it the most, though I have seen it where it can come all the way up here towards town and affect all flights.
He says it seems like ash is blowing to the island more often this spring due to the lack of a winter snowpack. Reporting in Kodiak, I'm Davis Hovey.
This is Alaska Public Media.
When the little bluebird, who has never said a word, starts to sing, spring, spring. When the little bluebell in the bottom of the dell starts to ring, ding, ding. When the little blue clerk in the middle of his work starts a tune to the moon up above, it is nature, that's all, simply telling us to fall in love. And that's why birds do it, bees do it, even educated fleas do it. Let's do it, let's fall in love. In Spain, the best upper sets do it, Lithuanians, and let's do it, let's do it, let's fall in love. The Dutch in old Amsterdam do it, not to mention the Finns. Folks in Siam do it, think of Siamese twins. Some Argentines without means do it, people say in Boston even beans do it. Let's do it, let's fall in love. Romantic sponges, they say, do it. Oysters down in Oyster Bay do it. Let's do it, let's fall in love. Cold Cape Cod clams, gainst their wish, do it. Even lazy jellyfish do it. Let's do it, let's fall in love. Electric eels, I might add, do it, though it shocks them, I know. Why ask if shad do it? Way to bring me shad roe in shallow shoals. English souls do it. Goldfish in the privacy of bowls do it. Let's do it, let's fall in love.
And good morning, everybody out here in Southwest Alaska. I was thinking about when I first blew into town, that was like 23 years ago, and I was going to be a skiff man on a boat up here. That was all very well and good. But the next day, my full day here, well, let me start a little bit earlier than that. When I first blew into town, I think Frank was the cab driver. I mean, I didn't know anybody. Nobody knew me here at the time. So I had him drive me around so I could see everything. You know, look in the harbor, boy, there's really no scows. I'm in the right harbor here. You know, crab pots everywhere. Wow, this is way cool. So I had him drop me off at the bar. This is like, I think, 2:30 or 3 in the afternoon. The bar was open. Yeah, can you believe that? That's the way it used to be around here. And I told the bartender, don't tell anybody who I am. I told her who I was. And it was all very well and good. So I'm sitting all alone in the on the bar. A couple of people came up, some skippers here, and they, you know, want to know who I was and all that, because they haven't seen me. And I said, well, I'm Dave. So what's, are you going to fish up here or anything? I said, well, what I got going, I just got approved to have a fish farm up here. I'm trying to find some kids to, you know, help me work that. Can you believe it? Oh, yeah. They weren't happy about that one. I go, hey, it's just a joke. I'm Zach's dad. And everybody cracks up. Another thing that was really funny is Skipper I had that year. I'm in a bar looking out over, you know, like a straits, and the ferry's going out. And my captain at the time was on his jet ski, and he's going around and around the Alaska Ferry and cutting back and forth in front of the bow. And I go, man, if you do that in Puget Sound around Seattle, you're going to be put in handcuffs. Boy, that's paradise. I mean, it's incredible. And we're free up here. Anyway, the first day I was up here, I went to write to cash a check, and the gal that was cashing checks looks at me and goes, I don't need your ID. You're Zach's dad. Well, I had no idea who the heck she was. I mean, I said, man, I'm in paradise. I really am. It's amazing. Anyway, that gal ended up becoming the mother of my first grandson. Life is good. Paul Anderson will start us out with Happy State of Mind, and Pam Tillis, that's Mel Tillis' his daughter, Shake the Sugar Tree, and then Waylon Jennings with Midnight Rider.
Maybe I don't love you quite as much as I believe I love you, baby. But don't tell me, 'cause loving you's a happy state of mind. Maybe I don't need you quite as much as I profess to need you, baby. But don't leave me, needing you's a happy state of mind. And we used to say anyway that love is not a game we play. Why is it always gotta be considered a condition of the heart? As long as I feel warm inside, let it feel dissatisfied. Who am I to be denied this feeling? Be it love, or be it just a happy state of mind. Maybe it's just something I've imagined in the hours when I'm sleeping. But don't wake me, 'cause dreaming's a happy state of mind. Maybe I've just gotta hurt somebody from your place and your somebody. But don't leave me, you put me in a happy state of mind. And we used to say anyway that love is not a game we play. Why is it always gotta be considered a condition of the heart? As long as I feel warm inside, when it feels unsatisfied, who am I to be denied this feeling? Be it love, or be it just a happy state of mind. You put me in a happy state of mind. Loving you's a happy state of mind. Having you's a happy state of mind. Don't take away my happy state.
Till I feel your love falling, oh. not the way that it used to be. A little time's gone by, and do you think that I'm content with a cookie and a pen to the rim? No, I wanna know if your love's all spent.
packing and unpacking your junk. Your daddy's mad, he's done got peeved. You gonna change or I'm gonna leave. You gonna change your way of living, change the things you do, stop doing all the things that you oughtn't to. Your daddy's mad, he's done got peeved. You gonna change or I'm gonna leave. This ain't right, and that is wrong. You just keep nagging all the day long. It's gotta stop, I don't mean please. Now you gonna change or I'm gonna leave. The way to keep a woman happy and make her do what's right is love her every morning, ball her out at night. Your daddy's mad, he's done got peeved. Now you gonna change or I'm gonna leave. And go back to Dad. You tell him lies he don't believe. Now you gonna change or I'm gonna leave. You gonna change your way of living, change the things you do, stop doing all the things that you oughtn't to. Your dad is mad, he's done got peace. Gonna change or I'm gonna lose.
Yeah, you're gonna change or I'm gonna lose, and that's Hank Williams. Now, Conway Twitty after that, It's Only Make Believe. Before that, we have Hank Snow and Anita Carter. There we go, Bluebird Island. And then after the Conway Twitty, I'm gonna try to find a Johnny Cash song about when Johnny Cash blows into town. We'll see if I can find that.
My ship's left sail to Bluebird Island. I was slowly drifted out to sea. Oh, silver sails to cross the ocean. My lover's lost. Message brought to me to sail my ship of love along the moonlit bay and anchor in the harbor of your heart. The trade winds there on Bluebird Island soon dried her lonely tears. Within my heart to stay.
everywhere. They think you really care, but myself I can't deceive. I know it's only make believe. My one and only prayer is that someday you'll care. My hopes, my dreams come true. My one and only you. And no one will ever know how much I love you so. My only prayer will be that someday you'll care for me. But it's only make-believe. My hopes, my dreams come true. My life I'd give for you. My heart, a wedding ring. My all, my everything. My heart I can't control. You rule my very soul. My only prayer will be that someday you'll care for me. But it's only make-believe. My one and only prayer is that someday you care. My hopes, my dreams come true. My one and only you. No one will ever know how much I love you so. My prayers, my hopes, and my schemes. You are my every dream, but it's only make-believe.
And the one I was looking for is not the night Johnny blew into town. It's the night Hank Williams blew into town. We're going to hear that. And then Joe Dimple with Ships That Don't Come In. And Johnny Hurt. We might have time for all that with Lovers Rock. Here's Johnny.
Harry Truman was our president. A Coke and burger cost you 30 cents. I was still in love with Mavis Brown on the night Hank Williams came to town. I Love Lucy debuted on TV. That was one big event we didn't see, 'cause no one stayed at home for miles and round. It was the night Hank Williams came to town. Mama ironed my shirt and Daddy let me take the truck. I drove on out to Grapevine and picked old Mavis up. We hit that county line for one quick round. On the night Hank Williams came to town, 1,000 people sweltered in the gym. Then I heard someone whisper, "Hey, that's him." That's when the crowd let out this deafening sound. It was the night Hank Williams came to town. On and on he sang into the night. Jambalaya, Cheeky Heart, I saw the light. How'd they get Miss Audrey and that gal? On the night Hank Williams came to town. Mavis had her picture made with Hank out by his car. She said he sure is humble for a grand old lottery star. Mavis said, "Why don't we hang around? It ain't often that Hank Williams comes to town." While Hank signed his autograph on Beulah Road,
Reisner's fan. Mavis got acquainted with the drifting cowboys band. The effect on all our lives was quite profound. On the night Hank Williams came to town.
Remember, friends and neighbors, Hank Williams and all the drifting cowboys will be at the high school gym in person for one show only this Saturday night. The big two-hour show starts at 7:30. Tickets are just $1.50. You get your money's worth the first 15 minutes, and the rest is free. That's Saturday night. Advance tickets on sale now.
I could tell he'd had a tough life by the way he sat and stared. And me, I'd come to push and shove, so I pulled up a chair. We talked of roads untraveled, we talked of love untrue, of strings that come unraveled. We were kings and kindred fools. And just when I'd hit bottom, that old man raised his glass and said, at least we've had our chances. There's those who never have. So here's to all the soldiers who have ever died in vain. Insane locked up in themselves, the homeless down on Main. To those who stand on empty shores and spit against the wind, and those who wait forever for ships that don't come in. Said it's only life's illusions that bring us to this bar, to pick up these old crutches and compare each other's scars. 'Cause the things we're calling heartaches held a hardly worth our time. We bitch about a dollar when there's those without a dime. And as he ordered one last round, he said, I guess we can't complain. God made life a gamble, and we're still in the game. So here's to all the soldiers who have ever died in vain. The insane locked up in themselves, the homeless down on Main. To those who stand on empty shores and spit against the wind, and those who wait forever for ships that don't come in, and those who wait for ships that don't come in.
I know about. I go there with my baby every time I take her out. We park by the rock and watch the lights down below, and I tell her things that she ought to know. They call it the Lover's Rock. They call it Lover's Rock. Well, everybody's rocking and it's very little talking, just a hugging and a kissing going on.
just can't wait for Saturday night. We'll park by the rock in the pale moonlight. I'll grab my baby and steal a kiss, and then I know she'll be stealing it right back again. They call it Lover's Rock. They call it Lover's Rock. Well, everybody's rocking and it's very little talking, just a hugging and a kissing going on. Around. It's a short way up, but it's a long way down. They call it Lover's Rock. They call it Lover's Rock. Well, everybody's rocking and it's very little talking, just a hugging and a kissing going on. Hugging and a kissing going on.
Cowboy sweetheart, I wanna learn to rope and ride. I wanna ride o'er the plains and the desert, out west of the great divide. I wanna hear the coyotes howling as the sun sinks in the west. I wanna be a cowboy sweetheart, that's the life I love the best. I wanna ride old paint going at a run. I wanna feel the wind in my face. 1,000 miles from the city life, going a cowhand's pace. I wanna pillow my head near the sleeping herd while the moon shines down from above. I wanna strum my guitar and yodel-a-dee-o. That's the life I love. Yodel-a-dee-ay-o.